Israeli forces once again kill Gazans waiting for aid as the regime's indiscriminate attacks claim more civilian lives across the blockaded territory. A UN expert says Israel's launched a starvation campaign against Palestinians in Gaza by destroying the territory's food system. And the U.S. president comes under fire for a State of the Union address voicing support for aid to Gaza. The death toll from U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza nears 30,880, more than 5 months into the war in the Palestinian territory. Now, at least 78 Palestinians were killed in airstrikes since Thursday noon. That, according to the health ministry in Gaza, said the regime conducted 8 massacres against people across the besieged territory. The latest attacks that hit different locations from northern Gaza to central and southern parts. A refugee camp in Jabalia, cities of Deir al-Balah and Rafah, as well as Gaza City, were all targeted. The total death toll is now nearing 30,880. Also, over 72,400 Palestinians have been injured in this war taking place with U.S. complicity. And now let's take a listen to some comments by Palestinian parents and medics explaining just how malnutrition is affecting their children in Gaza.
There is no proper food for the mothers, especially in the recent period, as we noticed that since December until today, there are no babies with normal weights. Most of them are from 2 kilograms to 2.5. We stopped seeing babies weighing 3 kilograms as in the recent period. The last 4 months since October until today, there is no nutrition for mothers. There is no meat, milk, eggs, fruits, or vegetables.
I'm a mom who lost her son due to malnutrition, due to circumstances we're going through in Gaza. You can see for yourself where we live, in a school inside a 3-meter tent right in front of toilets. What are you expecting from a sick child living in such conditions? How can he get better?
Yazan al-Kafarna, who passed away, was displaced from the north, and he originally had issues with his muscles, but his health was acceptable. He used to receive proper treatment and healthy food, but with the lack of food after the war began, he got worse.
Now, March 8th marks International Women's Day, an occasion women throughout the world celebrate and also use to push for their rights. But the situation is quite different in Gaza. There, women, along with children, have made up most of the casualties caused by Israel's campaign of genocide and face a worsening humanitarian situation. Let's take a listen to some of the comments by the women of Gaza.
We face the horrors of bombings, endure harsh conditions in tents, and suffer from extreme weather. That leaves no room to celebrate.
Women worldwide eagerly await and celebrate this day, whereas Gazans live in tents and are deprived of rights and unable to celebrate it.
I'm a woman who lost an eye due to bombardment. We're constantly being relocated from one tent to another, moving from one region to the next.
We're displaced and we've experienced the loss of our homes and our children who were martyred. Our hope is to one day celebrate Women's Day in our hometown under ordinary circumstances.
The largest Muslim civil rights organization in America criticizes President Joe Biden for his stance on Israel's genocide and the humanitarian situation in Gaza. The Council on American-Islamic Relations, known as CARE, issued a statement on its X account after Biden made his State of the Union speech, and it called on Biden to stop playing both firefighter and arsonist during the Gaza genocide. The organization said Biden should stop airdropping food into Gaza and simultaneously sending weapons to Israel. CARE urged the U.S. president to secure a real Gaza ceasefire. On Thursday, Biden spoke about humanitarian assistance in Gaza during his final State of the Union speech as president. He told Congress Israel should not use aid as a bargaining chip.
Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. And they're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. For the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority.
As Biden was speaking, some of the audience members held placards calling for a Gaza ceasefire and a stop to weapons deliveries to Israel. Outside, there were similar calls with protesters waving Palestinian flags and expressing anger at Biden for supporting the Gaza genocide. His administration has been lending all-out support to Israel, from weapons to money, and also blocking UN Security Council resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire. New report by the Washington Post reveals U.S. has quietly made over 100 weapon sales to Israel since the Gaza war began in early October. That, besides the hundreds of millions of dollars in weapon sales to Israel that Biden initiated without congressional approval. Now, UK charity is saying airdrops and temporary seaports are not realistic or lasting solutions to the starvation and famine in Gaza. And this is in reference during that State of the Union address. U.S. President Joe Biden said he wants to set up a pier there in the Gaza coast to get food into the hands of starving Palestinians. The UK charity is saying this is totally unrealistic and it's not a lasting solution to the problems for Palestinians in Gaza. Meanwhile, political analyst William Jones out of Washington, D.C. believes that Biden will continue supporting the Gaza genocide.
He is really in trouble with the support that he's given to Israel. It has alienated a significant part of his own party. Not only the Arab vote, but also many ordinary Americans who aren't of Arab or Palestinian heritage, who have been just totally shocked by the amount of deaths, by the genocidal conflict that Mr. Netanyahu is conducting in Gaza. He's just not willing to confront the Israelis there. I mean, all of this has to do, I think, with the election. On the one hand, if he plays hardball with Netanyahu, then the Zionist lobby here in the United States is going to be upset with him, and he'll have trouble in that area of possible voting. But if he doesn't do something, at least make the effort to try and assuage and to bring down this crisis, he'll also have people in his own party who won't be going out to vote for him. So he's playing a very dangerous game here. But I think the upshot of it is that he is not willing to stop a genocidal war in Gaza. And therefore, as you mentioned, and I think is quite true, the United States is therefore holds responsibility for the deaths that are ongoing in Gaza today.
The United Nations human rights chief warns expansion of Israeli settlements in occupied Palestinian territories amounts to a war crime under international law. Volker Turk said Israeli settlements have expanded by a record amount. He said that means the regime wants to transfer its own population into occupied land. The UN official added growth of settlements risks eliminating any practical possibility of a Palestinian state. He made the comments in a report to the UN Human Rights Council. Turk said Palestinians are being forced from their homes by Israeli settlers and state violence. He added violence and settlement-related violations have reached shocking new levels. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. And now joining us out of the besieged Gaza Strip, central city of Deir al-Balah, is Moti Abu Musavib for the latest on the ground there. Hello, Moti. Hope you're safe. What can you tell us with respect to Israeli atrocities that took place in the last 24 hours there?
Yes, actually, before talking about the latest developments on the ground, let me say that according to Gaza's health ministry, the Israeli occupation forces committed at least 8 appalling massacres against the Palestinian civilians over the last 24 hours, claiming the lives of 78 Palestinian civilians and injuring some 104 others. These numbers are still rising and soaring exponentially as the Israeli strikes are still maintained and continued against sporadic areas of Gaza Strip. And over the last couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces intensified their attacks and their airstrikes against the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city. 2 residential buildings were hit simultaneously in Abasan and Al-Qarara neighborhoods. Dozens of the Palestinian civilians were inside those houses and they destroyed the house over their heads. Dozens of the Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed and injured. It's worth mentioning that Since today's morning hours, the Palestinian paramedics and the medical staff evacuated at least 18 Palestinian dead bodies from the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from several parts of those areas. It's noteworthy that the Israeli occupation forces killed those people over the last couple of days, and they were preventing the Palestinian medical staff and the Palestinian paramedics from evacuating them to the hospitals. Now, after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from those areas, the Palestinian paramedics and the Palestinian people were able to discover and to evacuate those people. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces attacked and targeted another civilian car in the western parts of Khan Yunis city. A Palestinian civilian was reportedly killed in addition to dozens of the Palestinian injuries. They were evacuated to the Gaza European Hospital located in the southern part of Khan Yunis city. However, in Rafah, another residential building was knocked by the Israeli airstrikes. Dozens of the Palestinian civilians were reportedly injured. And Gaza City, Az-Zaytun neighborhood, was targeted heavily by the Israeli artillery shelling over the last couple of hours. And in the meantime, Gaza Health Ministry announced that the number of the Palestinian civilians who were killed over the latest Israeli attack on the Palestinian civilians who were gathering near an Nablus roundabout amounted to 9 Palestinian civilians. They were killed once again as they were waiting for the humanitarian convoys to reach Gaza City. And even in the northern part of Gaza Strip, particularly Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia, they were targeted by the Israeli artillery and several residential buildings were destroyed in the meantime. On the other hand, the Palestinian resistance, particularly Al-Qassam brigades, announced that they have targeted the Israeli occupation forces mobilized in the eastern part of Beit Hanun city, and they have sniped another Israeli officer in that area. Knowing that Beit Hanun was subjected from the very beginning of this onslaught on Gaza to a ground offensive that destroyed everything and claimed the lives of thousands of the Palestinian civilians from the residents there. On the ground, the Israeli war of salvation is still claiming more lives of the Palestinian children. Those Palestinian children became deprived of having any real access to the food, drinkable water and milk. So they are perishing. We have witnessed more videos and more materials about those people who are lost their lives before the eyes of the whole world in front of the cameras, as they have nothing to eat. So the starvation is still continued and claiming more lives of the Palestinian people. And actually, thousands of the Palestinian civilians are promised to lose their lives if this catastrophic humanitarian conditions continued for so long time. Over to you.
All right, Moti. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for that update. Moti Abu Musabi joining us from Deir al-Bala in the besieged Gaza Strip. And protesters have poured into the streets of the northern Yemeni city of Sada in yet another rally in support of Palestinians in Gaza. And protesters chanted slogans against Israel and its main supporter, the U.S. They've been holding rallies on Friday since the Gaza war broke out in early October. Yemenis voiced support for their army's operations as well against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red and Arabian Seas. And they held placards reading, "The next one will be greater." That a day after leader of the Ansarullah resistance movement promised stronger operations. The demonstrators also voiced support for their army's attacks on American and British ships That in retaliation for the two countries' airstrikes on Yemen. The U.S. and U.K. claim those airstrikes aim to protect international shipping. Meanwhile, the Yemeni army has launched yet another attack on a U.S. vessel in the Gulf of Aden. U.S. officials say at least three crew members have been killed in that attack. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Hours after targeting two American destroyers in the Red Sea and at the same location where the sunken British ship Roby Mar was attacked, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that they had successfully targeted the American cargo ship True Confidence in the Gulf of Aden with naval missiles, causing the ship to catch fire.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles. The hit was accurate thanks to God, which led to the fire breaking out on it. The targeting operation came after the ship's crew rejected warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Officials suggest that the U.S. claims of the loss of lives come within the Western narrative and could be a fabrication to justify larger aggression against Sana'a and to garner international support against Yemeni Navy. Operations.
Since 2015, we have been facing the American-backed Saudi aggression, and in all our military operations, we have not targeted any civilians, and this is an honorable history for our armed forces. Regarding the deaths of civilians in the attack on the American ship, this news comes within the American narrative. This news may be fabricated to escalate attacks against Yemeni territory. We are prepared for confrontation in all its forms, and our naval operations will escalate whenever the Western attack escalates, whether against our brothers in Gaza or against Yemeni territory.
U.S. officials reported that three of the ship's crew members were killed while others were critically injured.
Observers state that the Yemeni army's latest operation substantiates that the threats of escalating naval operations were not mere media propaganda. Moreover, they assert that the Yemeni army has already begun deploying unexpected weaponry, catching the U.S. Navy off guard and leading to the failure to protect its vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the Commander-in-Chief of Iran's Armed Forces, Imam Khamenei. Martyr Soleimani revived the resistance front and its strengthening must continue. December 31st, 2023. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. We are grateful to God for gifting this worldly reward to this outstanding figure, Martyr Soleimani, every day before our eyes. What you are witnessing, the spreading and propagation of his name and memory, is this honorable man's worldly reward. We cannot even imagine or fathom what kind of reward he will receive in the hereafter. This is just his worldly reward. I imagine that from the day he was martyred and continuing up until today, Martyr Soleimani's name, his memory, and his characteristics have spread among the people many times more than during his lifetime. This is the same thing that someone once said, Martyr Soleimani is more dangerous for us than Qasim Soleimani. The other side had said this. They were right. That truly is the case. So, not only has the dust of forgetfulness not settled on this martyr, his splendor, brightness, and lucidity have increased every day, and God willing, this will continue to increase even more. This is God's grace. Why did this happen? I believe it is because of Martyr Soleimani's sincerity. This is the same thing that is often difficult for people.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We do things, but the spirit of the work that we do lies in sincerity. The work that was undertaken by this martyr truly had this kind of spirit in it. He truly worked with sincerity. We would sense this when we communicated with him about his work. There was no showing off, pretentiousness, or egoism in his work. He worked for the cause of God. His actions were for the cause of God. I believe it was his sincerity that made his worldly reward so apparent. We observed such a thing in Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, as well. He was the same. 3 or 4 days after Imam Khomeini had been buried, a large meeting was held in his shrine. The shrine was barely anything at that time. They had just enclosed it with a fence. We went there. I went with a helicopter. As I stared down at the desert there, that section has been built now, but it was mostly a desert back then, I saw the crowd walking there on foot. Who was taking them there? What was it that appealed to them so much that it drew them there? I said it was Imam Khomeini's sincerity that drew those people there, and it was the same with our dear martyr. He was a sincere man.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Face to face. Hello and welcome to another edition of Face to Face. I'm Mahdi Abbasian. Today in the studio, we are joined by one of the members of the political bureau of the Hamas resistance movement, Mr. Osama Hamdan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hamdan, the Al-Aqsa flood was a powerful, unexpected blow to the Israeli occupation. But did you anticipate the Israeli response to be this much brutal and heinous?
There is no doubt that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood represented a success for the resistance movement, a success in carrying out a large-scale operation without the enemy being able to take action preemptively. This operation succeeded in seizing the entire Gaza positions within just hours. This is undoubtedly a great achievement, but here's the question. Was there any expectation for the enemy's reaction? Certainly. It was expected that there would be a reaction, but it is the nature of the occupation. It kills you, seizes your land, arrests you, and imprisons you. For example, in the West Bank in 2022, Before the operations, the number of martyrs was about 500. The number of wounded people who were taken to hospitals exceeded 3,000. We are talking about thousands of prisoners. Under this occupation for 75 years, you have two choices. Either you do nothing and it continues to kill you, capture you, and seize your land, or you resist and the enemy will continue the aggression. But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to their right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for the occupation, and that in the end, this enemy will be forced to leave your land. Therefore, when you always choose resistance and you anticipate the scale of aggression and the enemy's reaction, you are convinced that this is the path that will lead to liberation.
With all the killing, destruction in Gaza, backed by the West, especially the United States, how do you plan to rebuild your popularity and also lay foundations for a new phase?
First, we start with the fact that the United States of America does not just support Israel. The United States of America is a partner in crime, a partner in genocide. It may appear to support Israel politically, but in practice, it provides ammunition, equipment, and weapons to the Zionist entity. It also employs all technological facilities in discovering tunnels and thus serves as pillars of Zionism. It is a full partner in the crime against the Palestinian people. On the other hand, when we talk about our popularity, we are not worried about it because historically the Palestinian people have always been the ones who choose resistance, and the popularity of resistance always rises. 2 months ago, various opinion polling institutions conducted an opinion poll about the popularity of the Palestinian Authority. Hamas is popular in Gaza, which was not so before the operation. Before the war, Hamas's popularity ranged between 40 to 45%. After the operation, its popularity rose. The Palestinian people saw that the resistance movement has been fighting this army for days, an army that boasted about its invincibility. People began to feel that the chances of liberation were higher than ever before. So Hamas's popularity rose. This gives us additional responsibility. How do we deal with this popularity and what serves the interest of our people to achieve national success? There is no doubt that this is a great responsibility.
Definitely it is. Now, there are propositions suggesting that Hamas is being coerced into relinquishing its leadership role in Gaza post-war amidst American and possibly Arab support, now leading to a transition to the Palestinian Authority. Now, what is Hamas's stance on these propositions, and how do you plan to particularly thwart them?
Firstly, it is clear that Hamas was never committed to being the ruling authority. We have always adhered to a specific principle that the Palestinian people are the ones who elect and who choose their leadership through free elections. The leadership must present a program to the people that hold it accountable. Our program is clear. We resist for liberation. We won the election in 2006 and served this platform. America cannot change this fact, and we do not accept its interference in our internal affairs. We have informed all Arab countries that their interference over the Palestinian people is rejected. Whoever decides the next day in Gaza or the Palestinian people alone. This is the first part. The second part, we met with all the Palestinian factions and an agreement was reached on basic issues, including the formation of a transitional Palestinian government after the war in which all the factions are represented and have their authority to hold elections and begin the reconstruction process. Therefore, we are not concerned about the future of the leadership of the Palestinian people as much as we are keen for the leadership to be the one that has the option of resistance and believes in the complete liberation of Palestine.
The next question is, your objective with Operation Al-Aqsa was to shed light on the plight of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, yet the occupation has added around 10,000 new prisoners. Does Hamas still prioritize shedding light on prisoners, or is it the priority now to reach a ceasefire and to get humanitarian aid into Gaza?
Let me clarify here that the issue of prisoners was just part of the objectives of the operation and was not the primary objective of it. The main goal of the operation was to confront the project of the Netanyahu government, which announced that it would end the Palestinian issue within the next 4 years. He developed a program to seize Al-Quds and transfer ownership of real estate from the Palestinians to the Zionists, seizing the maximum level, building more settlements in the West Bank, and developed a program to bring in 1 million new settlers from outside of Palestine, Jews from all over the world, and decided to begin the process of rebuilding his relations in the region, with American support, to form a situation in which Israel appears to be a natural entity. The operation came to say that Palestine is still under occupation. The Palestinian people are still resistant. We want to liberate our land, and this is what happened. One of the results of the operation is that the prisoners will be transferred. One of the results of the operation is that the siege on the Palestinian people ends. But the essence of the process is to put the Palestinian issue on the right path.
Great. Now, if a ceasefire is agreed upon, what kind of a guarantee can there be that ensures the U.S. will comply with the terms, or the Israeli regime for that matter, especially if and when all the captives are released? Because we know when it comes to Israelis, they are not very good with being committed to their oaths and their commitments.
I agree with you that the Israelis do not abide by agreements and covenants. Their history of this is very bad. Therefore, the real guarantee is the resistance's ability to continue the confrontation with the occupation. The real guarantee is the ability of the Palestinian people to withstand. The real guarantee that we won in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is that the Israelis and Americans began to realize that the resistance axis is capable of applying pressure to support the resistance in Gaza and is capable of having an effective influence on the political positions in favor of the resistance. Therefore, when you make an agreement, you bet on the power cards you hold, that they are the ones that can be a true guarantor of the agreement that was concluded. The occupation will try to evade or deceive, but we will also try, through the power cards we possess, to make it as disciplined as possible.
And Mr. Hamdan, speaking of negotiations and ceasefire talks, why did Hamas withdraw from the Cairo negotiations? Does the delay harm Palestinians more or the occupation?
The truth is that we did not withdraw from the Cairo negotiations. What happened was that after the Paris meeting, a proposal was presented to Hamas regarding a ceasefire and some details. This proposal was also presented to the occupation side. For us, we responded to the proposal. We proposed some modifications to it and developed our vision to improve the proposal. On the Israeli side, the mediators were surprised because Israel, which had expressed its approval of the Paris proposal, retracted parts of it. Therefore, the mediators began trying to bring Israel back to the Paris proposal. We must wait for the reaction of the mediators with the Zionist entity. From our side, there was a clear statement by our brother Ismail Haniyeh, head of the Political Bureau, that we deal positively with ideas that we are keen to stop the aggression, provide relief to our people and the people of the siege, and the start of reconstruction process. In exchange for all of this, we will go to the prisoner exchange process. and therefore we have clearly defined our position. We are waiting for the enemy to have a positive position. The ball is in their court and the mediator's court. We have not backed down. As long as we are negotiating, we go on with it, and as long as the fight goes on, we fight.
Mr. Hamdan, how can Hamas utilize internal pressure on Netanyahu by emphasizing the urgency of releasing prisoners in Gaza, by highlighting the significance of this issue within Israeli society and among political stakeholders? This heightened pressure may compel him to seek a ceasefire deal that aligns with Hamas's terms in order to de-escalate tensions and address the issue of prisoners effectively.
There is no doubt that in the negotiation process, you make every effort to put pressure on the enemy. One of the tools of pressure, which you also mentioned, is to the prisoner swap, what these prisoners are suffering from, and the killing that occurred to some families as a result of the Israeli Air Force's bombing of some sites. Also, some of the prisoners were killed directly by the occupation army, as happening with three soldiers who were captured by the resistance, and then the group that captured them was martyred. When they escaped, the army killed them despite identifying them. This puts great pressure on Netanyahu, but the resistance also has other tools to put pressure on Netanyahu. One of them is the resistance's unrelenting firing of rockets at some cities and regions occupied in 1948. The continuation of the resistance action on the battlefield against the occupation is putting pressure on Israel, because every day there are more deaths among the occupation soldiers and more losses among the files and ranks of the army. Just for the army, the destruction of 1,000 military vehicles out of about 4,000 military vehicles in the ground forces is very heavy. This is all a lot of pressure on Netanyahu. An important addition that should be noted is the action of the resistance in southern Lebanon, or what the Ansar Allah resistance is doing in Yemen, or the resistance in Iraq. This created pressure on the Zionist entity and also on the United States, which does not want the confrontation to expand in the region because it still believes that it can rearrange the region. The expansion of the confrontation will cause the Americans to lose control in the region, and the region will go on paths that will not necessarily be in the interest of the Americans, but rather will be in the interest of the people of the region. And this is what the Americans fear. These are all pressure cards on Netanyahu, and I believe this is the secret of the American insistence on reaching a solution that leads to a ceasefire.
Now, something about a ceasefire. Right now, the situation in Rafah. Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, even if a ceasefire agreement is reached. How can Hamas, you know, restrain Netanyahu's recklessness in his military options in Gaza?
When Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, he is seeking two purposes. The first goal is to create pressure on the resistance to give up some of its demands in the negotiations. The second one is to try to put pressure on the mediators, otherwise things will deteriorate further. We said to the mediators that any move Netanyahu makes to attack Rafah will be faced by the resistance, but it will also make Netanyahu involved in a genocide massacre. And everyone knows that the International Court of Justice issued a preliminary ruling and set conditions for it. If Netanyahu is involved in a military operation towards Rafah, this will confirm that what he is doing is genocide, and this means that he is committing a crime against humanity, and this will have repercussions not only for him, but also on the American administration, which I mentioned a little while ago that it is an accomplice in this crime. That's why we're applying confrontational pressure. I think that Netanyahu is hesitant about the Grand Operation, but if he decides to do so, things will not be easy for his army.
Now, the world sympathizes greatly with the Palestinian people, but Israelis are attempting to influence global attention. For example, by Israeli president presentation of a book titled The End of the Jews to convince the world that Hamas seeks to annihilate the Jewish population. Now, how do you respond to such displays, especially in a significant security conference like the Munich conference?
I must clarify an issue by which the Israelis and the United States are trying to put pressure on us. We do not fight the Israelis because they are Jews. We are fighting them because they are occupiers of our land. Meaning if they leave our land, we will not pursue them and we will not fight them. Our battle has a political dimension that has nothing to do with the fact that they are Jews and believe in Judaism and has nothing to do with the fact that they came to Palestine or are present in other places. The real problem is that they occupied our land. The Jewish problem as a religious one is not related to our country. Rather, the Jewish problem began in Europe. They were expelled from Britain in the 16th century, and for 200 years, Jews were banned from entering. In France, they were prevented from exercising their religious rights from 1400 AD until 1808. In Spain, they were expelled and prevented from exercising their religious rights until 1982. In Germany, we know what happened. Every time the Jews fled this persecution, they came to our Muslim country. And you know that there are Jews in all Muslim countries who live in safety. The problem rose when they decided to become an occupying force, usurp our rights, and kill our people, which prompted us to resist them. Therefore, when the Zionist chief of staff talks about the end of the Jews, he is lying and trying to make excuses for a story that we did not create and was created by the Nazis. I think the answer to it is very simple. The Zionist media published pictures of him signing the missiles that were fired to kill our people, women and children. Therefore, I hope that he changes the title of his book to say, "The End of the Occupation." Yes, the occupation will end, and we as Muslims will certainly be able to end it. This is our religion, to embrace all people of other religions. As Palestinians, we have Muslims and Christians. No one has ever talked about a crisis between Muslims and Christians in Palestine. Rather, we lived as one nation. Therefore, yes, the occupation will end, but not on the basis that the head of the Zionist entity or the Zionist propaganda speaks about. They want to make us appear as brutal people.
Thank you. That was a very thorough explanation of the conflict between Palestinians and the Israeli regime. Now, let's talk about what's going to happen after the genocidal war in Gaza. How do you envision the end of this onslaught and now entering its fifth month without a clear ceasefire on the horizon?
There is no doubt that the occupation announced the goals of its military operation. They announced that they want to destroy the resistance of Hamas. They want to destroy Hamas, meaning the resistance. They announced that they wanted to free the prisoners from the hands of the resistance. They announced that they wanted to form an administration for the Gaza Strip, an administration linked to the regime. After about 5 months, what happened? They failed to eliminate the resistance. The resistance on the battlefield is still fighting. Every day there are losses among the occupation army, dead and wounded. They are still held captive by the resistance. The enemy was unable to free anyone alive except for what took place according to the exchange we agreed upon. They failed in trying to create a situation in which an administration in Gaza works with the occupation. They once spoke about clans and families, and the families issued a statement saying that they were biased towards the resistance. They tried to talk about a civil administration to be imposed on the Palestinian people. The Palestinians announced that they would deal with it as agents of the regime. Therefore, they failed in all of their goals. They had only one thing left, and that was the attack on Rafah. Its results will also be a failure. The enemy will realize at some point that it is unable to succeed. The Americans realize this issue and therefore are trying to persuade the Israelis to accept a ceasefire. The regional countries that accepted the Israeli aggression began to realize that the resistance's victory would not serve the interest of the Zionists. Therefore, I believe that the chances of reaching a ceasefire agreement, even if they do not seem high so far, are now present, and we will do our best to achieve it as quickly as possible, God willing.
And Mr. Hamdan, you already mentioned the support for the Palestinian resistance by the Iraqi resistance, the resistance in Yemen and Lebanon. Now, I want to ask you, how do you evaluate, how does Hamas evaluate this support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip? Have they, you know, slowed down the pace of the onslaught in Gaza or exerted significant pressure on Israel and Americans that support them or are complicit in their crimes to impose certain options on Netanyahu?
I think there were two impacts. There is a direct impact and there is a strategic impact. The direct impact of the Resistance Act in Lebanon forced the occupation regime to keep parts of the army in northern Palestine. This means that if this confrontation had not occurred, this entire army would have launched an aggression against Gaza. And therefore, the Israeli army's ability to confront it in Gaza would have been exhausted. Also, the resistance in Lebanon succeeded in inflicting real losses and casualties on the occupation army, and the occupation army began to feel that it might fall into additional trouble if this aggression continued. The resistance in Yemen succeeded in sending a clear message. A siege on the Palestinian people means a siege on the Zionist entity. The American administration did not succeed in dealing with the matter despite its aggression against Yemen. It has been proven that this aggression did not lead to any cessation of the resistance in Yemen, represented by our brothers in Ansarullah. In Iraq, the American administration thought that the Iraqi people, after everything they had gone through and suffered from the American occupation and the injustice they suffered, might not care about issues like the Palestinian issue. The Americans were surprised that the Iraqi people began their resistance to confirm that they were with Palestine, and thus the Americans seemed to realize that they were losing and that their losses would be reflected in Israel. Strategically, I believe that the resistance action in Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq achieved two goals. The first is that it sent a message that the resistance in the region is cohesive and works together in its own way and not according to what others want. Its method is effective. The second issue is that this axis has a firm, principled position and is using its capabilities in an intelligent and wise manner and is capable of achieving results. This means that the future of the region will not be according to what the United States of America or the Zionist entity wants. Rather, we are approaching a stage that the future of the region will be according to what the people of the region want. Therefore, I believe that what was achieved strategically and momentarily was important.
Okay, and the next thing I want to ask you, Mr. Hamdan, is about reports that suggest that Hamas, a political bureau chief, Ismail Haniyeh, and leader of Hamas in the Gaza Strip have lost contact. What is the situation now between the two? Has contact been reestablished? Or the other thing that I want to know, is there a disagreement between the two when it comes to a ceasefire?
Let me answer the second question, which is the consensus on a ceasefire. There is agreement on all the basic issues, whether between Brother Ismail Haniyeh, Brother Yahya Sinwar, or even within the political bureau of the movement. Most of the talk about internal division is rumors spread by the Zionist occupation forces, the psychological warfare organization in the occupation army, whose goal is to weaken the Palestinian front so as to make it appear as if there's a division within the resistance to affect our people or to make us comment and say that unity exists or that there is a certain thing going on which may lead to providing information to the Zionist entity that will help it reach the leadership of the resistance in Gaza. We say that the leadership decisions are made through the contribution of all members without exception. Its decisions enjoy the support of all leaders of the movements in their various positions. Rather, I go further and say that we do not take these decisions, especially regarding the ceasefire, except after consulting with our brothers in the Islamic Jihad movement and in the other resistance factions, because they are also partners in sacrifice. They are our blood partners. We cannot take a decision without consulting them all.
Thank you so much, Dr. Osama Hamdan, member of the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment. Rabbana
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mahdi.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين. May Allah's peace and blessing be on His last messenger وعلى آله الأطهرين and on His pure progeny. We were spending some moments in the previous sessions touching on the parts of the 12th dua of Sahifa Sajjadiyah. The title of this dua is Fil I'tiraf wa Talab at-Tawbah ila Allah Ta'ala, in confession and seeking repentance or seeking forgiveness to Allah Subhanahu wa Ta'ala. We are approaching the golden time of our life, the golden time of our year, where the night of Qadr, where this destiny of ours will be set, where our sustenance will be finalized and written, is going to be fallen into this month. Every moment of this month is so important that the Holy Prophet says, "Naumukum fiha ibadah." Even your time that you take a nap and you sleep, the time of your rest is counted as worshipping of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Everything that you do, every action that you do will be counted as a work of worship, as an act of worship. Even breathing while you're fasting and while you're in this month of Ramadan. So it's so important for us to utilize and take benefit of this month to connect with the teachings of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam in the du'as of Sahifa Sajjadi. And one of the very good du'as to be recited on these first 10 nights of the month of Ramadan, on the very first bend of the month of Ramadan, is this 12th du'a. He says, Imam in here says, Alladhi, I am the one, Al-Mustakhiffi bi-hurmati Rabbih. I am the one who has made the light of his Lord's inviolability and whose sins are dreadful, great. الَّذِي أَذُمَتْ ذُنُوبُهُ فَجَلَّتْ. Let's take a break and come back.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
and Imam Sajjad alayhi salam continues this dua, dear respected listeners. Imam says, وَأَدْبَرَتْ أَيَّامُهُ فَوَلَّتْ حَتَّى إِذَا رَأَى مُدَّةَ الْعَمَلِ قَدْ انْقَذَتْ. Whose days have parted, have fled, have gone, has expired, until when he sees, until there's a moment that you come to yourself, that you get yourself back together, and you see that the term of his works has expired. Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen has a beautiful hadith that many of you have memorized, and inshallah all of you have heard this before. If not, this is our gift to you tonight or in this episode. Imam says, Al-Furaso, the opportunities, Tamurro, they pass, Kamar al-Sahab, they pass like the passing or like the passage of the clouds. What is the quality of the passage of the clouds? You look at the sky, there's no noise. There is no speed symptoms. But they're really moving really, really fast and quick. Why? Because you look at the skies and you look at the skies a few minutes later, the clouds are not there. They move noiselessly and quickly. This is how the opportunities of this life are. Imam says, Al-Furaso tamurru kamar as-sahab. The special timing of the month of Ramadan will come and go. The special timing and period and season of forgiveness will come and go. There are certain acts that you could do in the month of Ramadan that you cannot do them. You cannot perform them outside of the month of Ramadan. The veils and the gates and the blockages that you have created by your actions outside of the month of Ramadan will be removed unilaterally from the side of the Lord, from the side of Allah, just for the sake of the blessing of this special season, this special time, this special period. وَمُدَّةُ الْعَمَلِ قَدْ انْقَذَّتْ. The term of his works has expired. Let's take a break and come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Respected listeners to the program Bridge, as we are approaching the holy month of Ramadan, in these remaining days and hours before the start of this month of Allah, a month of the mercy of Allah, we ask Him, the Almighty, to forgive us in the remaining hours of the month of Sha'ban. Allahumma in lam تكن غفرت لنا في ما مضى من شعبان. If you haven't forgiven us in what has passed from the month of شعبان, forgive us in the remainder of the month of شعبان, before we enter upon this feast of Allah, this month of mercy. And Imam Zain al-Abidin, in the 12th dua of Sahifa Sajjadiya, he says, I come to the point until when a servant, he sees مُدَّةُ الْعَمَلِ قَدٍ قَذَتْ, the term of his works expired, and وَغَايَةُ الْعُمْرِ قَدٍ تَهَتْ, and the limit of his lifetime has reached. There are some people who are hospitalized with unknown or very complex